Well, now, I know that some of you are not going to believe this. Trust me. You're not going to believe this, but I turn 50 this year. Yes, it doesn't look like it, I know. But I am. I turn 50 this year. Can you believe it? Now, I need to tell you, there are lots of bonuses to being middle-aged. I got lots of bonuses. Although my children love to say, Dad, you're way beyond middle-aged because you're never going to make 100, you know. So you're way beyond middle-aged. But no, I'm middle-aged. And there are a lot of advantages. But I'm going to tell you about some disadvantages. In fact, just one. There is a huge disadvantage to getting older. And a few years ago, I made this horrible discovery, just a couple of years ago. Here's the thing I discovered. I am no longer bulletproof. I mean, can you believe that? I've grown up being bulletproof. I've been bulletproof my whole life. And I made an awful discovery. And it was a few years ago. What happened was I took my youngest daughter to a playground in a local park. I mean, really? That's a safe place. Don't you think a playground's a safe place? I mean, pretty safe. Well, you can't get hurt at a playground, can you? I mean, it's safe for children. So off I take my youngest daughter a couple of years ago to this playground locally. I think it was in Wanneroo, but anyway. And there we are. And she says, Doody, let's go on the merry-go-round. You know those things? Do you know what a merry-go-round is? That thing that spins and spins and spins and you run and jump on and it's got the little thingies you hold on tight to. You know, one of those. It's harmless, isn't it? It's harmless, right? So here I am. I'm a guy, surfed my whole life. I kite surf. I'm rough and tough. My child says, Daddy, let's go on the merry-go-round. Definitely. And there I arrogantly, look at all those other dads, all those middle-aged guys, you know, bald, fat. There they all sit. Of course I'll go on the merry-go-round with you. Aren't you lucky your dad's still a machine? You know, look at those, I jump on the merry-go-round and I'm like pushing this thing and we start going faster and my daughter's like, woohoo, wee, this is so fun. She's having a great time. And it happened. I suddenly got so sick. I was like, and I was nauseous and I literally was frightened that I'm going to, you know, bring up or something. I felt horrible and I just wanted this darn thing to stop. And when it stopped, I got off and I couldn't walk straight and I felt sick. You know, and there's all these happy, bouncy people and there's this middle-aged bald guy feeling really, really horrible. You know, I can't go on roundabouts anymore. I'm fragile. Can you believe I'm fragile? You know, and if you find me in a playground now, I'll be sitting with the other bald guys. You know, I know my place, okay? You know? Now, the reason I start, that's a funny, stupid little story, but the reason I start like that is because it's a small picture of what life is actually like. It's a little picture of what life, sooner or later, this is going to happen to you. It's going to happen to you. Everybody knows that life can feel like a merry-go-round. It can feel like a merry-go-round. Like I'm just doing the same thing every day. This is not deep. Everyone has seen this before. You remember that movie Groundhog Day? It was a classic movie in its day, you know? It was about this guy who got stuck in the same day. And he had to live the same day every day. But even ancient movies like The Lion King, I mean, how old is that? You know The Lion King, that animated movie? The start of it is Elton John, you know, singing The Circle of Life, you know. Everything's the circle of life. Everyone knows, and we experience it now and again, that life just feels like you're going round and round. You wake up, and you eat breakfast, you brush your teeth, and you go to school, or you go to work. And then you come home, and there's not much to do, and you eat, you go to sleep, and then you wake up, and you do it all again. And then you hit repeat, you know. I wake up, I do stuff, I go to sleep, repeat. I wake up, I do stuff, I go to sleep, repeat. I wake up, I do. Now, when you're young, it's all fun. Wee! You know, how fast can this thing go? It's so fun. What happens? You start getting older, and it starts getting a bit boring. But then it starts to make you sick. And you're sick and tired of being sick and tired. It's just going round and round. And it starts to make, you walk into, bump into a middle-aged guy, and you go, hey, mate, what's going on? And he's like, hey, same old. He's sick. He's just going round and same old. We all know that it can feel like that. And we all know it's not going to carry on forever. One day, that merry-go-round is going to and come to a halt, a dead halt, literally. And so the question is, what's the point? What's the point of going round? What's the point of doing the same old thing all the time? Am I heading somewhere? Is this going somewhere? Or am I stuck just spinning round and round, feeling sick all the time? Can I get off? Can I get off this thing? You might not be a Christian here today, and you're so welcome to come along. Thanks for being open-minded and checking this whole thing out. But I'd love to ask you, where are you going? What are you heading for? And you get old and you look back and you say, gee, I've been doing the same thing every day for... So where's it going? Why did you do all that repetition? Why did you keep repeating yourself your whole life? What's going on? Will it be worth it in the end? Even if you're a Christian here today, you know God and you've found God and you've realized God is the best joy and the best treasure that nothing else I've experienced is like knowing Him. But even you know that sometimes it feels like you're going round and round. You get closer to God. Oh man, and you feel so, and you love, and then you drift away. And you go back to like it always was, and then you get closer to God again. It's like, awesome, yeah. And then you drift away again. It's like, oh, I'm on a roundabout. It just goes round and round and round. I meet up with Christians. I say, so how's your spiritual life going? How are you doing? And they look at me and I think I'm growing. Am I growing? Am I just going round and round? You come to church and you hear the Bible and your heart gets warmed and you walk out the door saying, this week, me and God, we're going to like, ooh, you know, Wednesday and then Thursday and then Friday you wake up ice cold. Oh, I feel so far. Do I want to go to church this Sunday? Nah, not, to be honest, not really, but I get paid, so I better go, you know. And then you come to church and you get warmed up again and your heart's on fire. And then Monday, is it just going to go round and round forever? If you think like that, you're not alone. I'm going to do something weird. I'm going to show you a poem. Have a look at this poem. Now listen. You think... You speak English and you think that's not English. It is. It's from the 17th century, okay? It's very old. But I want to do this for you because I want to show you how clever it is. It's a poem from the 17th century. Here's the first verse. He says this, "Oh, to vex me, contraries meet in one. Inconstancy unnaturally hath begot a constant habit. That when I would not, I change in vows and in devotion." Just keep it there, Stuart. Now, I said that was going to be English. That's not English. No, it is. Let me show it to you. Here's what he's saying. It frustrates me. Oh, to vex me. I'm frustrated because I am so inconsistent. And here's what makes me mad. I'm totally consistent in being inconsistent. That's what he's saying. It's inconstancy has unnaturally begotten a constant habit. How weird is that? And that when I don't want to, I change in my spirituality, in my vows, in my devotion. Like, I can't keep this thing up. Have a look at the next verse. "As humorous is my contrition, as my profane love, and as soon forgot." English? He's saying, when I'm saying sorry, that's what contrition is. And, oh God, I'm sorry. Meantime, it's a joke. See, it's humorous. My tears are a joke. "As my profane love." When I love God, actually, it's profane. And anyway, I just forget the whole thing anyway. Look, soon forgot. "As riddlingly distempered, cold and hot, as praying as mute, as infinite as none." What's riddlingly distempered? When you've got a fever. You know, you've got a fever and you're in the lounge and you say, darling, bring me a doona, I'm freezing. And then she brings you a doona and it's like, oh, it's so hot, put the aircon on. You know, you hot and cold, hot and cold. Hot. There's a song about that, hot and cold. Katy Perry will not enter this pulpit. Okay, so, but anyway, you can't decide, are you hot or are you cold? And then you pray as nothing. Carry on, look at the next verse. I durst not view heaven yesterday. Today in prayers and flattering speeches I caught God. Yesterday I was frightened of God. It's like, whoa. Today he's my buddy and I flatter him, you know. And then tomorrow I quake with true fear of his rod. I can't make up my mind. It's like a merry-go-round. I just go round and round. Look at the last verse. And so my devout fits come and go away like a fantastic ague. An ague is a fever. And he's saying, my spirituality is like a fever. It just comes and goes, like a merry-go-round. You know what? I'm sick of this. I just want to get off. Save, and he's got a great last line. Save that here. Those are my best days when I shake with fear. But that's another song. There's John Donne for you. There's a poem. The reason I put it up is, can you relate to that? Is there any part of you that recognizes this forward and back, and I'm just so inconsistent? Well, I have got such encouragement for you. And it's in our passage in Deuteronomy 30. Our passage in Deuteronomy 30 has got fantastic encouragement. Here's what we've been doing. We've been studying the book of Deuteronomy. It's a very old book. And what's happened is we've been studying the history of Israel. And when you look at the history of Israel, that was God's people back then in the Bronze Age, what happened was they're on this roundabout. So God rescues them from Egypt. And there's signs and wonders, and they go through the Red Sea, woohoo! And it's like, yeah, us and God, we're like this. It's high. And straight away as they go into the desert, oh, it's too hard, and I'm tired of this, and they drift away. And then what happens is God takes them all the way to Mount Sinai. And whoa, there's signs and wonders and woohoo, and us and God are like this. And then they get bored and they start worshiping a golden calf. In other words, it's a merry-go-round. Yay, you're hot. No, you're not. Yay, you're hot. No, you're not. And even then, God takes them to the promised land and it's amazing. And wow, look at the grapes, huge grapes, you know. And oh, but the people are too big for us. No, we can't do this. We don't want to do this. And so they go up and down and up. Finally, God is so angry with their merry-go-round. He says, you like going round and round? Fine. You're going to go 40 years round and round in the wilderness. And for 40 years, they go in circles around in the wilderness. And in our passage, there's a high point. What's happened is they're on the edge of the promised land. Look, they can see it. It's just across that valley over there. At last, after 40 years on the merry-go-round, they've got off. And they're going to go into the land. They're going to get everything God has promised. But guess what? Even here, Moses says, I know you're feeling good. You're going to turn from God again. Look at what Moses says. Have a look at this passage. For I know that after my death, you will surely act corruptly. You're going to turn the merry-go-round. You're going to turn aside from the way that I commanded you. And in the days to come, evil will befall you because you will do what is evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger through the work of your hands. Moses says, even though you feel good, and this is rah, rah, and we're renewing the covenant in Deuteronomy 29, I know that you're going to turn away again, which is tragic. And so, what must we do? Somebody asked me, how do I get off the merry-go-round? How do I stop this thing? I got two things for you from our passage. Two things. The first one's the longest. No surprises there. Number one, return to the Lord with all your heart again. That word again runs through our passage. Return to the Lord with all your heart again. Look at verse 1. And when all these things come upon you, the blessings and the curse which I've set before you, and you call them to mind among all the nations where the Lord has driven you, and return to the Lord your... Here's what Moses says. You're going to get driven by God. God is going to drive you from himself, and you're going to be scattered just like the other people. That's what's going to happen to you. You know, it happens to us as well. Here's what happens. You're a Christian. You know God. You wake up one morning. Suddenly, you wake up one morning and you realize, oh, I'm so far from God. I'm so far. This week, you look back over the week. This week, I haven't done any real business with God. Really, to be honest. I haven't done any business with God this past week. I started reading the Bible with the family, but I haven't done it this week. You know, we just kind of like, it didn't happen. And I don't know, it's so hard to start again. If I haul out that Bible and say, come family, let's read the Bible, the teenagers are going to roll their eyes like, Dad, how long is this going to last? You know, it just fell apart. I look back over, it's been such a busy week at work. God hasn't been in my mind. In fact, I missed church on Sunday, and I missed church the Sunday before. I don't do growth groups because I'm like, I'm busy. You know, I don't go, you know. This week I watched TV for 4 hours. For 4 hours I sat there while the world entertained me and God was waiting. It's just like I'm so far from it. This week I dropped an F-bomb because I dropped a hammer on my toe. You know, it kind of like just, it was the best word at the time, you know. I wasted time here. You know what? And you wake up and you suddenly realize, what's the difference between me and the other people in Perth? Actually, we're exactly the same. You've drifted off into the other nations. You've been like them. You're just like the other nations. And when that happens, what must you do? Oh, no, I've been here before. I said this wasn't going to happen. And it's happened again. What should I do? Should I give up? Christianity is too hard. What should I do? The answer is, come back again. Come back again. Look at verse 1 and 2. And when all these things come upon you, the blessing and the curse which I've set before you, and you remember, you call them to mind among all the nations where the Lord your God has scattered you, and return to the Lord your God, you and your children, and you obey his voice and all that I command you today with all your heart, with all your soul. What must you do? Come back. Return. Of course, in Israel's day, it was physical. If you backslide today, God is not going to send you to Yanchep. That's not how it works today. In their day, God literally spread them out. But in your day, you're living just like the peoples and the nations around you. And God says, come back, return to the Lord. When you remember, return. What incentive is there to return? Why should I come back? I tried it once. Actually, I tried it 262 times. Why should I come back? Look at verse 3. Look at the incentive. Then the Lord your God will restore your fortunes and have compassion on you. And he will gather you again from all the peoples where the Lord your God has scattered you. Why should you come back? What's the incentive? And the answer is, God is your best reason to come back. Look at what he is like. You go back to him and guess what you discover? He restores your fortunes and he showers you, as it says there, with compassion. Look at the Father heart of God. He's standing there hovering in compassion, just waiting for you to come back. He's hanging on the edge of his seat, waiting for you to come back. Think about Luke 15, that story Jesus told of the prodigal son who goes wafting away and he spends all his money on prostitutes and ends up eating pig swill with pigs. What's the father doing? What's the father doing? Oh, well, he's dead. That son is dead. You disgraced the family. Don't you come here, boy. You made your bed. You lie on it. No. We read in Luke 15, the father's pacing up and down. He's looking at the Mitchell Freeway. When's my son coming back? This passage tells us God is exactly the same. He's pacing up up and down in heaven, showered with compassion. When will they come back? When will they come back? When will they come back? And when you come back, what do you find? He's so ready to take you back. He wants you to come back. You know what they say? What's a family? What's a family? A family is where, when you have to go there, they have to take you back. Isn't that what a family is? A family is where, when you have to go there, they have to take you back. Well, you know what? God's better than that. Because if you go back to him, he doesn't have to take you back. Of course he doesn't. He wants to take you back. He's filled with compassion. I love the way on the cross, Jesus Christ died like this. It's such a graphic picture. It's open-armed. Jesus is hanging there with open arms saying, look, it's open. I'm not against you. I'm for you. Come back to me. My arms are open. God has compassion for us. He longs us for us to come back. And I know what you're thinking. Yeah, but I've been too bad. Look, tell me to come back to God. I've come back so many times. Like, I've come back so many times. You know what? I've burnt my bridges. Friends, the cross is a bridge you can't burn. The cross is a bridge that cannot be blown up. It is always there. It stands forever. It is the way back to God. You spend all your money on prostitutes and you've been eating with pigs. God says the bridge of the cross still stands. Come back. Come back to me. And it doesn't matter where you are. Look at verse 4. It's not in the English, but the Hebrew sense is, even if your outcasts are in the uttermost parts of heaven, from there the Lord your God will gather you. From there he will take you. It doesn't matter where you are. You look, you're in this hole, right? And I've been in this hole forever. You know, I keep jumping back into this hole. Look, there, I carved my name on the side. Jeez, there, you know, there's the date where I was in this hole. You know, I keep jumping in the same hole. It doesn't matter where you are. Even from the uttermost parts of heaven, God says, I'll take you back. I'll take you back. From wherever you are, I will take you back. Obviously, for Israel, that was physical. Look at verse 5. And the Lord your God will bring you into the land that your fathers possessed, that you may possess it. And he will make you more prosperous and numerous than your fathers. In Israel's day, it was physical. In our day, it's not, because this is not the promised land. But still, did you see that? You come back to me, says God. Get this. I will make you more prosperous than you were. When you come back to God, you are filled with a sense of joy and reception from your father that was better than you used to have. The prodigal son spends all his money on prostitutes. He goes, eats with pigs. When he comes home, what does his father say? Hey, you can come back, but you're sleeping in the garage, okay? No, he kills the fattened calf and there's a feast and he takes his ring. You get blessed just for coming back. Because God is compassionate. That's what he likes. That's what he wants. He is filled with compassion. You're thinking, okay, I've messed up so many times. What will I say to God if I come back? What must I say? Well, the Bible even tells you what to say. Look at this beautiful passage from the prophet Hosea. Return, O Israel, to the Lord your God. For you have stumbled because of your iniquity. Hey, you can't come back empty-handed, okay? What must you bring? Words. That's all God wants from you. Can you believe it? All he wants from you is words. Look what it says. Take with you words and return to the Lord. Say to him, I love this, take away all iniquity. You've done wrong. You've messed up. Do not go from here thinking, I better make it up to God. Hey, I'm going to clean up my life and then I'm going to go to God. Don't be silly. He cleans up your life. Take away all iniquity. You go to him with your failure and you dump it on him because he deals with it. You take it away, God. You still can't come back empty. You have to bring a sacrifice. Look what it says. Accept what is good, and we will pay with bulls the vows of our lips. Do we bring bulls? What sacrifice do we bring? Well, this is why it's so amazing. Jesus Christ is the sacrifice that God provided. He's already provided your sacrifice. He's paid for you to come back. It's like your disobedient son is down in Mandra. That's where disobedient people go. And he's down there and he's messing up, and you send him a car filled with petrol to bring him back. God has paid everything. So just please come back. Just come back. Return to the Lord your God. Look at the next verse. It's quite incredible. Assyria will not save us. We'll not ride on horses. You're thinking, what's that about? That's Israel. They kept trusting in other things. So you've got to say to yourself, I must stop trusting in other things. This is not going to make me happy. That's not going to make me happy. I'm not trusting in those things anymore. And we will say no more our God to the work of our hands. I'm not going to find extreme value in other things. Look at this. In you, the orphan finds mercy. In you. I'm like an orphan scattered, but it's in you I find mercy. And listen to God's response. Well, I need to think, let me process this for a while. You've done a lot of bad things, you know. I've taken you back so many times. I need to work through. No. Look what God says. I will heal their apostasy. I will love them freely. Look at those words. I will love them freely. You come back to me, I love you. Just like that. I'll love them freely for my anger has turned from them. Don't be misled. Your rebellion, your sin makes God angry. But look what he says. My anger has turned. And what do you want to say? I want to say, where's it gone? God is angry. Where's it gone? It's turned. Where's it gone? It's gone to Jesus. On that cross, Jesus took God's anger. God is not angry with Dwayne. Because God poured his anger on Jesus in my place. And so he loves me freely and he heals my merry-go-round. Look at verse 9 and 10. The Lord your God will make you abundantly prosperous in the work of your hand, in the fruit of your womb, in the fruit of your cattle, in the fruit of your ground. For the Lord will again take delight in prospering you, as he took delight in your fathers. Don't you love that? Forgive me, but I'm going to say it like this. Do you want to make God happy? Do you want to make God's day, if I may speak like this? Go back to him, because he delights in it. Look what it says. And the Lord again will delight in prospering you. When you go back to God, you make him filled with delight. Look at verse 10. When you obey the voice of the Lord your God, keep his commandments and statutes that are written in this book of the law. When you turn to the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. Friends, how can you walk away from a God like this? He hangs there open arms. He's paid for everything. He longs to be compassionate. He just wants you to come back. If you walk away from him, here's my question for you. Where are you going? Where are you walking to? If you turn from God, tell me. Take me to the dome. Tell me what you've discovered that is better than a God like this, who loves you so much. But you say, Dwayne, I get that, you know, I must go back to God. But am I not just going on another merry-go-round? Sunday today, of course you're going to say that, and of course my heart's going to go, you! But am I not just going around again? Where's the hope? Here's my question. How do I get off the merry-go-round? There is staggering encouragement in this passage for you. God is not just kind. God is not just compassion. Hear this. God is the one who makes the first move. You and your teenager, you have a fight. Okay, so she's, and you're like, and she's gone down that passage and slammed that door like it's welded. And she's stuck on her bed and she's like, and you've gone to the lounge and you've flopped in the couch and you're like, and between you is a titanium wall, yay thick. And she's there and you're there. And who's going to make the first move? Who's going to make the first move? Well, I guess it depends who the adult is. I guess it depends who loves the most. When you and God, and you've had your little thing with Him, and you've walked away from Him, guess what? God is the perfect parent. He always makes the first move. And that's our second point. And it's very brief. Astonishingly, the Lord will return you to Himself again. This is the encouragement. And it's there for us in verse 6. I skipped over it, but verse 6 is the heart of this passage because it's a chiastic structure, which you can ask me afterwards. The solid hope is verse 6. Look at verse 6. And the Lord your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your offspring, so that you will love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, that you may live. Now, for obvious reasons, I am not going to explain circumcision, okay? But you need to know this is Bronze Age. This is going back a very long way. And simply, circumcision in the Old Testament, long ago, nearly 4,000 years ago, was a sign that meant one thing. Set apart exclusively for God. Circumcision was a sign that you were exclusively His. That's what it was. But what Moses is saying in verse 6 is that in the future, God is going to do something better. In the future, what God's going to do is He's going to take control of your heart. What was an outward, visible sign, in the future, God's going to do that in your heart. God is going to restructure your heart so that you will love Him. Look at verse 6 again. And the Lord your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your offspring so that you will love the Lord your God. You know, even the most powerful genie in the world can't do that. Now, I know you know as well as I am that the best animated movie ever made was Aladdin. Obviously, it was the best movie ever. Okay. Do you remember when Aladdin discovers the genie lamp and he rubs the genie lamp and out comes Robin Williams, you know, the big blue genie, and he's the most powerful genie in the whole world. He can do anything, absolutely anything, but there are a few quid pro quos. And one of them is Nick's nay on the wishing more than three wishes, okay? But that's another subject. But one of the things the genie says to Aladdin is, I can't make anyone fall in love with you. Most powerful genie in the whole world. I can't make someone fall in love with you. God is better than that. He's so powerful. He can make you love Him. And that's what He's promising to do. What He's promising to do is work in your heart, restructure your heart so that, look what it says in verse 6, so that you will love Him with all your heart and with all your soul. This is the promise of the altar. This is how we get off the merry-go-round. This is the cry. How can I love God? It's the hope of the Old Testament. Have a look at this. This is the way the prophet Ezekiel puts it. God says, I'll give you a new heart. And I'll put a new spirit in you. And I will remove your heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. And I'll put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, be careful to obey my rules. God says, I am so going to do a cardiological thing. I'm going to restructure your heart so that you love me. It's the promise of the new covenant. It's the promise of the future. You know what Jesus calls that? You want it in English? Simple. To be born again. Jesus says that's what it means. To be born again. To be born again means you get off the merry-go-round. It means God gives you a heart to love him. And what are you thinking? Why? Why does God want me to love him? Is he needy? Why does God want me to love him? Look at verse 6. The Lord your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your children so that you will love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul. Why? So that you may live. God wants you to live. And so he wants you to love him so that you will live. Why? Why? Think with me. Because to love is to live. To live is to love. Pick any human being in Perth, in Joondalup. The day you stop loving everything, you've got nothing left to love, you're dead. You've died. The human heart was designed to love. And I want to tell you that as you get older, all the things you love get taken from you. When you're old and you're in frail care, you won't love your jet ski anymore. It means nothing to you. All your loves get taken from you. But if you love him, what will get taken from you? You will live forever. God wants you to love him because he loves you and wants you to live. Listen. If you walk away from God, you're going to be stuck in a merry-go-round, chasing something to love, and you're going to get nauseous, and you're going to get sick. One day, you will die. And to your complete astonishment, you will have nothing to love. Then, forever, you're going to be going round and round, feeling nauseous and sick. Absolutely pointless. The Bible calls that hell. God says, don't go there. God says, come back to me. Love me. So that when you die, guess what? You're heading straight for the one you've always loved. And he has always loved you. And you've practiced that your whole life. You return. When you die, you return to the God that you kept returning to through your whole Christian life. And when that happens, you're off the merry-go-round. You're with your Father. Supernatural joy forever. Return to the Lord with all your heart. Again, the Lord will return you to himself. Again, it's such concrete hope. I've got a little prayer here for you. First of all, I'm just going to let you think about this for a few seconds. Maybe do some real business with God. And then I've got a silly little simple prayer here, which I will pray. And feel free to pray it with me if you want to return to the Lord again. So I'm going to give you a few seconds.